is the shield that can be cracked but never broken. You can laugh in the face of 6 battalions and remember that this is our territory, and the snow and ice and storms of winter are when we are at our strongest. We are the rock that cannot be moved, the stream that cannot be dammed, the sword that cannot be parried. Terran's fists were clenched at his sides, his chin jutted out, his dark eyes gleaming with fire and determination. He felt good, right, powerful, almost like he was rising off the ground. "What say you?" he bellowed. Silence. Shuffling feet. Shifting eyes, most refusing to meet his. And then, "Do we get breakfast?"
Terran gaped at the man who'd spoken, none other than the old geezer from the barracks, the one with the infernal cough.
"Aye," another man said. "If there's hot food involved, count me in."
A chorus of agreement rippled through the group of men who remained.
Food, Terran thought, like it was a magical word. "I'll have to remember that."
"Yes," he said. "There will be food. We just have to find it first."
The men cheered and slapped each other's backs. As it turned out, finding food wasn't a major challenge, at least not in the short term. In Lord Darin's haste to flee the city, he'd left much of the castle's enormous store of provisions behind. There were lumpy sacks of oats, flour, and beans. There were baskets of potatoes growing fresh green shoots. There was a larder hanging with salted meats, antelope and deer, and even several sides of mammoth and rump. And there was ale.
"Frozen hell," Terran thought. "There's enough ale to keep the soldiers inebriated for the entire winter."
His first order as Lord Commander, the men had unanimously agreed on the position being his, was to command Sir Jonathan to guard the mead. His next order was for every man to take a bath before breakfast. He could barely breathe because of the stale stink in the air. The men dove into the task with remarkable energy, almost as if they'd been starved for something to do. But Terran knew they were just starving for breakfast. In any case, they gathered large tin tubs, filled them with armfuls of snow, and then built fires beneath them to melt the snow. Some of them were so keen to get to breakfast that they didn't even wait for the water to heat, screaming as they scrubbed themselves in the icy water. The entire scene might have been amusing if Terran wasn't so busy thinking about what to do after breakfast. While Terran was considering his plans, Fay snagged several of the first soldiers out of the tubs and conscripted them to organize the castle storerooms and prepare food. At first they'd balked at her barked command,
"Don't take no orders from a woman."
But when Terran shot a glare in their direction, they hopped right to it. Once a vat of porridge was well on its way to being ready to eat, Fay plopped down next to where Terran sat on his helmet.
"You did good," she said.
Terran laughed, thinking he hadn't done anything so far, but then said,
"You too."
She echoed his laughter, and he wondered whether she felt the same way he did, that this was all some strange dream, the kind you get after eating something that had gone off.
"You know," she said, "we need to do something about your armor."
This was one of his least favorite topics of conversation, and yet he knew she was right.
"Aye, it's snug around my hips and teats," he japed.
"More like everywhere," she said. "How does a man as large as you manage to grow even larger?"
He was tempted to speak openly to her, but the words stuck in his throat. Jokes were easier.
"By eating enough for 3 men every chance I get."
In truth, Terran probably ate less than most of the skinny soldiers who were putting away 2 or 3 bowls of porridge and still going back for more.
"No," he thought. "The violence feeds me, the bloodlust, the screams of those who fall beneath my morning star." "Yes," the voice inside him answered, "and I grow hungry again."
Terran bit down hard on his lip until he tasted blood, until the voice faded away once more.
"Terran," Fay said, "are you well?"
"I'm fine."
"You look rather pale."
A smile flitted across her lips.
"Hilarious."
"I'll build you new armor," she promised.
"We will need the forges firing day and night," he said,
trying to push the focus away from him.
"Armor, weapons. We may have a small force, but they must be well equipped."
Fay nodded in agreement.
"I'll speak to the men, find out if any of them have smith experience. If any of them deny me, I'll send them to you."
Terrin offered her a grim smile.
"Don't let the men work on my armor until the rest of the company is outfitted with weapons and plate."
Fay narrowed her eyes, but didn't contradict his order. Instead, she asked,
"How long do you think we have before the East attacks?"
"A fortnight, if we're lucky. Half of the time to march to the Black Cliffs, the other half to scale them."
"These men need months, if not years, of training."
Terrin didn't argue with that.
"It will have to be enough time," he said.
He stood, strode to the line of men waiting for porridge, towering over them like an ice bear over wolf pups, accepted his bowl, and then sat beside them in the snow. Everyone was fresh and well-rested and would soon have warm, full bellies.
"Aye," he thought, "this is good."
Because next he would work them until they could no longer stand. Terrin embraced his old friend, their arms clasped. Sir Jonathan's eyes never left Terrin's face, seeming to take in every detail.
"You're handsomer than I expected," he said, taking a seat by the fire.
Terrin tensed at the jape, but then relaxed. He needed to get used to people seeing the real him, especially the soldiers he hoped to fight alongside. He sat down as well, sipping water from a tin. A light rain had begun to fall, very strange for the season. Typically any moisture in the air was frozen this time of year, puffy flakes of snow or stinging bullets of sleet. This misting rain was odd, to say the least.
"And you could use a second bath," Terrin said, recoiling, pretending to hold his breath.
In truth, the knight now looked much the same as Terrin remembered, having trimmed his scraggly beard, cut his tangled hair, and scrubbed the dirt from his skin. Even the gaunt, bruised look his cheeks had held was swiftly fading.
"What were you in the dungeons for, anyway?"
It was a question that had been itching at him ever since he realized who the man was. The man he knew would never even consider committing a crime. A model soldier.
"You know, this and that," Sir Jonathan said.
"Mostly it was the murder that did it."
Terrin gaped.
"What?"
The knight looked away, and that's when Terrin realized what was truly different about this man. It had never been the unkempt appearance of a prisoner, nor the weariness in his expression. No. It was the haunted look that never seemed to leave his eyes, even when he forced a smile onto his face. Something had happened to this man. Something worse than prison.
"It's not a happy story," Jonathan said.
Terrin said,
"It's yours to tell."
"And mine to keep."
Terrin nodded.
"I'll tell you my sad story if you tell me yours."
So they did. Speaking in low voices deep into the night, two ghosts sitting around a fire, watching as puddles of color gathered rain. 17. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Rhea Loren. Rhea was working on controlling her emotions, though it was proving difficult considering the incompetence she was surrounded with.
"What in Roth's name do you mean she escaped?" she said.
The nameless guardsman looked ready to wet his britches.
"I found her. Well, Your Highness, you see, when I made my rounds through the dungeons, the master was unconscious in Gwendolyn Storm's cell. The Orion's cell was locked up with him inside, and I found this."
He held up what appeared to be a noose fashioned from lengths of ripped fabric.
"She faked suicide,"
Rhea thought. When the dungeon master came inside the cell to cut her down, she'd sprung her trap.
Clever,
she had to admit. She'd underestimated the Orion, a mistake she wouldn't make again.
"Is that all?"
Rhea asked.
"No. After a closer inspection, I found the dungeon master wasn't really unconscious." "Dead?" "Not exactly. His eyes were open. His body was stiff. He was like Ben Gentry, you know, paralyzed." Rhea breathed, seething. First, her attempt to ransom Gareth Ironclad for one of the Skinmarked failed, and now the only other Skinmarked in the West, Gwendolyn Storm, had escaped. And she'd been double-crossed by Darkspell in the process. For the first time since she'd become Queen, Rhea felt like things were completely and utterly out of her control. "Get out," she said, pointing toward the exit from the throne room.
"Your Highness, if I may, a thorough search will be
out!" Rhea screamed, her voice rising.
"And find Darkspell. Bring him to me."
The guardsman's eyes widened, and he scuttled away, leaving her alone once more. Any moment her fury would return with Gareth Ironclad. She'd planned to execute him immediately to make a spectacle of it, to show her people they were already winning the war against the sinners of the East. But now, he was her only bargaining chip to keep her brother, Roan, on the straight and narrow path back to Night's End, hopefully with the Western Oracle or her long-lost son in tow. Yes, until Rhea recaptured the Orion, Gareth Ironclad would live. Approaching footsteps chased her thoughts away.
"Well, at least the decision is made," she thought. "For now."
When she saw who had arrived, she stood, pushing a broad smile onto her face.
"Children," she said,
opening her arms wide for a hug. Bea and Leo, her twin siblings, froze when they saw her. Her chambermaid stood behind them, trying to coax them forward, to little effect. The twins' feet were planted firmly, not defiantly, but with fear.
"They're afraid of me," Rhea thought,
and the realization saddened her for some reason. Something about having a soul growing within her had made her care more about the family she'd once despised. Unlike the last time she'd seen them, with their filthy faces and hair, they'd been cleaned up and dressed in fresh linens, a white purity dress for Bea, and long grey woolen trousers and a white shirt for Leo. They were much skinnier now, on account of the lean diet offered in the dungeons.
"Approach your queen," Rhea said.
Bee's lip quivered.
"You locked us in the dungeons for days."
Leo nodded his agreement.
"As I told you, it was for your own protection," Rhea said lightly. "We have many enemies, more than ever before." "They say Cousin Jove is dead," Leo said,
finally taking a step forward. He blocked his sister. He'd always been protective of his twin, though she tended to be the feistier one.
"He is. Tragic. First Bane killed father, and then our cousin. I should tell you Ennis is dead, too, though it was me who killed him. He committed treason, after all." "You killed Cousin Ennis?"
Bea practically shrieked, stepping from behind her brother.
"Here we go," Rhea thought. "Well, the silence was good while it lasted." "Executed is probably a better word to use," she said. "But yes, a queen must be strong and obey the law, just like everyone else. We all have to make sacrifices." "You're a monster," Bea said. "Don't say that," Leo hissed.
Rhea was fairly certain he didn't mean because it wasn't true. Rather, he was scared of what she might do to them.
"Good. Let him be scared. Fear will ensure his silence, that he will keep my secrets. Be, on the other hand." "Would you prefer to stay safe in the dungeons?" Rhea asked them.
"No," they answered in unison, doing that annoying twin thing.
"Please," Leo begged. "We'll do anything."
Bea nodded earnestly, though Rhea could see it was an act.
Broth, her sister, was breathtakingly beautiful.
When she was older, perhaps, Rhea would force her to carve the mark of wrath on her face.
"All I ask is that you love me, like you once did. Can you do that?"
Leo and Bea exchanged a glance, an unspoken agreement passing between them. They turned back to her. Leo nodded. Bea said,
"Yes, we can do that." "And what does the scar on my face represent?"
Rhea asked. Another glance. Bea, always the actress, answered,
"Your devotion to Roth, my queen." "Very good. And what do you know about Grey Aris? Who?
This time B was being genuine, and Rhea was happy to know she could tell the difference.
Sorry. You would know him as Grease Jolly. Oh, him. He was a common thief, and his sister was sin-marked. Your Highness brought them both to justice.
Rhea smiled.
Leo, do you agree with everything your sister said?
He nodded, apparently unable to speak.
Good. Now come give your elder sister a hug.
They did, and while they embraced, Rhea was surprised how truly happy she felt. She had a family again. Still, she was no fool. As soon as the twins had departed to get reacquainted with their royal bedrooms, she instructed her chambermaid to watch them like a hawk.
Tell me everything they do, everything they say, everyone they meet.
Her chambermaid nodded and then curtsied.
Yes, Your Highness, I will not fail you.
Gareth Ironclad was back in his tower cell. Gwendolyn Storm was still missing, though all of the Furia were scouring the streets of Night's End. The Orion would have been smart to slip away from the city as soon as possible, but Rhea's instincts told her she was still here and would stay until Gareth was either dead or liberated.
At least he's still useful as bait,
Rhea mused. Perhaps this was the way Roth intended it to be. Had she ransomed Gareth and then Gwendolyn had escaped, she would have nothing left to hold over Roan to bend him to her will. Then all her plans would be ruined. Without the Western Oracle's ability to create fate marks, she tried not to think about it. Instead, she focused on the next matter at hand. Darkspell had been found, not hiding, but in his laboratory of all places, mixing vile concoctions, attempting to create the potion he'd promised her. And now he was being shoved to his knees before her.
Gwendolyn Storm, our Orion prisoner, escaped,
Rhea said. Darkspell, wincing, said,
This is a setback. We shall require another subject for experimentation.
Either he was a very good actor, or he had no clue how the prisoner had escaped.
Her dungeon master was found paralyzed.
He cocked his head to the side, bird-like. Again, the performance was top-notch, unless it wasn't a performance.
A vial went missing. I thought I'd misplaced it. I do that sometimes.
Are you saying it was stolen?
Clearly.
Clearly, Your Highness,
Rhea corrected. The man, to her surprise, snarled at her.
If you think I would help an Easterner, an Orion, at that escape, then I have just the potion to clear your addled mind.
Watch your tongue,
Rhea started to say. But one of her new furies was already striding forward, lashing out, snapping a backhand across the potion master's face. His head jerked to the side and he fell back. When he swiveled back around, slowly, his cheek was inflamed and blood wept from a gash opened by one of the fury's sharp fingernails. Despite that and the dangerous position he was in, his expression remained defiant, the old man's eyes as sharp as his tongue.
Kill me, if you must. But it's the traitor in your midst you should be worried about. I came here offering you an advantage over your eastern rivals. After your decisive victory in the Bay of Bounty, I believed you were the horse to back in this contest. But perhaps I was mistaken.
Rhea didn't know who or what to believe any more. She thought after she'd destroyed the North and captured Roan, Gareth, and Gwendolyn, that things would fall into place, like a well-positioned row of dominoes. Instead, the tangled web of her plans seemed to be unravelling before her very eyes. Still, something about the potion master's story rang true. Why else would he not have fled after freeing the Orion prisoner? Unless it was a slick double manoeuvre, this man was innocent of everything but guarding his potions. And he was right. Her time was better spent finding the true traitor in her court.
I believe you, she said, and I would continue to have your services. The Orion's escape is no matter. We will simply release your potion directly into the spear and hope it works. If not,
We shall try again and again and again, until they're all dead." It had taken B no more than a day to betray Rhea, a truth that concerned her greatly. The speed and confidence of her sister's treachery shouldn't have surprised Rhea, but it did. B, despite the risk of going back to the dungeons, was made of stronger metal than she'd given her credit for. Rhea would melt her down and remake her.
According to Rhea's chambermaid, upon reaching her quarters, B had requested quill, ink, and parchment. She'd written a letter, sealed it the old-fashioned way, with wax printed with the royal sigil, and then called for a messenger, not to send the note via stream, but to hand-deliver it to one of the rival lords in Night's End, Lord Thorne, Rhea's grandfather on her mother's side. It was well known that the Thornes had long coveted the throne, though the closest they had come was wedding their daughter, Rhea's mother, Cecilia, to the Crown Prince, who'd later become the king and Rhea's father. Now, of course, Cecilia was dead, along with House Thorne's chances at ever ascending to the top of the royal food chain. Rhea's chambermaid had intercepted the message and brought it directly to her. Rhea's lips had pursed, and her blood had boiled as she'd read the letter, which was essentially a list of her crimes against Roth and the West, enough ammunition to have brought her to trial, her rule overturned and denounced. It was the darkest of treacheries, plain and simple. But now it was time to put an end to B's never-ending attempts to undermine Rhea's rule. She'd tried threatening captivity. She'd tried kindness. Fear was next.
"Thank you for joining me, brother, sister," Rhea said as her siblings approached, wearing wary expressions.
Well, at least Leo looked wary, uncertain, while B looked as smug as a dog with both paws clamped atop a bone. Rhea stood in a secure location along the banks of the Bay of Bounty, well out of sight of the royal docks, which were, as always, bustling with activity. Each of the three Furies stood guard, in case some fool stumbled into the area and saw something he shouldn't. In these sorts of situations, Rhea had learned, it was better to get right to things. Beating around a bush only gave the bush time to grow gnarled branches, thorns, and thick roots. It was better to hack down the bush, pull up the roots, and toss it all into the hottest part of the fire.
"You committed treason, B," Rhea said.
"What?"
B said, placing a hand over her heart.
"I would never do that."
Rhea held up the message, which fluttered open, the wax seal broken.
"I've never seen that before in my life. The nerve of this girl, even now, to deny her betrayal. I have a first-hand witness, and the message is in your handwriting."
Rhea showed no anger, only certainty. Still, B showed no fear, defiance coursing across her doll-like face.
"You aren't above the law," she hissed. "We are the heirs now, Leo and I."
Upon her mention of his name, Leo seemed to shrink into the collar of his shirt, as if he wanted no part in whatever was to come.
"You have sinned, sister, no matter what you tell our people. You know it, we know it, and Roth knows it. The scars on your face stand for whore, not wrath. Father would be ashamed of you."
"Enough,"
Rhea said, her temper finally reaching the end of its leash.
"This is not a discussion. I could have you executed for less."
Rhea didn't actually plan to kill her sister, only to scare her into submission. She'd done it with a far stronger woman, her first Fury, who had died to save Rhea's life during the battle they eventually went on to win. And now Rhea would do it with B, recreating her into the sister she wanted, submissive, loyal, scared.
"You would never execute me," B said. "I'm your sister."
As if that meant something in war. Softening her tone, Rhea said,
"Have you heard the stories of how I won the battle against the North?"
B's hands moved to her hips.
"We were in the dungeons, remember? We know nothing about nothing. Well, let me be the first to tell you the tale."
When she'd finished, B laughed.
"You used to make up stories when we were children, too. Used to try to scare us. It worked then, not now. A sea monster? That's the best story you've got."
Ignoring her sister's outburst, Rhea turned to the calm waters of the bay, which lapped against the rocky shoreline.
"Let this work. Let this work. Let this work."
She didn't know for certain whether she could summon Rathos at will, without the summoner's help, and he, of course, was dead. But Rhea believed she could, and she thought that was the most important thing. She didn't know the words to say or what to do with her hands, so she simply acted on instinct, raising her hands over her head, opening her palms to the sea, and shouted,
"Rathos! Your queen commands your presence!"
B giggled. Leo didn't make a noise, but Rhea could sense his amusement too. Nothing happened. And yet the still waters seemed even calmer now, like a sheet of ice. And Rhea couldn't so much as see but feel a presence approaching.
"Yes," she thought. "Oh, yes!"
Rathos exploded from the water in a spray of moisture, salty rain pouring upon their heads. B screamed. Leo gasped. And Rhea continued to stand, soaked to the skin, her arms raised to the monster rising before her.
"My monster," she thought. "Mine to command."
The giant squid's skin was red, dotted with algae and slime and barnacles, 100 tentacles writhing from the center. A single giant eye stared out from the bulbous body as it snapped its beak-like maw. Rhea looked back at her siblings, who were frozen in terror. B tried to take a step back, but stumbled, falling.
"Do you believe me now?"
Rhea said, her lip curled. Turning back to Rathos, she said,
"I shall have need of you soon. Your hunger shall be sated, and wrath shall smile upon you."
The squid seemed to bob its head in understanding.
"Now go. Return to the depths from whence you came. I shall call upon you in my time of need."
Slowly the squid began to descend, slipping beneath the surface. However, just as Rhea began to turn her back so she could steal another look at her sister's fear, a lone tentacle snapped out like a whip, slithering past Rhea.
"No,"
Rhea thought, ice coating her skin. Her sister's scream was a bright flame, as B was dragged through the air, her purity dress flapping like a bird's broken wing. A flame that was snuffed out only when Rathos crunched its beak down on her slender, lithe body, swallowing her before vanishing into the bay.
Rhea couldn't breathe, couldn't think,
could do nothing but sink to her knees and stare at her hands, the hands that had helped command the squid.
She felt numb, like she was stuck in a nightmare, the air thick and heavy. "No, this isn't real, isn't real, isn't... I didn't mean for this to happen, for her to... I'd only meant to scare her into obedience, right? Or was that my true command, deep inside my core? Is that what I am? A monster? The very same bee accused me of. Will my child have a monster for a mother?"
Leo's gasping sobs startled her. She'd forgotten he was here. Slowly she stood, blinking away tears. She turned, plastering on the face of an emotionally distant queen. Leo looked shattered as he stared at her, his red eyes brimming with tears, streaming like rivers down his cheeks. His hair was plastered to his head from when Rathos had soaked them. In this state, he really did appear as a child, and not 13 name days old, almost a man grown by the reckoning of the West. She was vaguely aware of the three, each turned in her direction, staring. Just staring. She ignored them.
"Will you keep my secrets, brother?"
Rhea asked, her voice as even as she could make it, though it trembled on the edges. Her bottom lip shook, but she clamped her teeth upon it until it stopped. Leo nodded, his head collapsing into his hands. 18. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Ennis Loren. Ennis paced the gardens in the dark, his shadowy form hidden by the thick branches of a juniper tree, blotting out a sky full of stars. He'd just received the news. Princess B was dead. Two had gone down to meet Rhea by the seaside, and only one had returned. The castle was buzzing with rumours and gossip.
the Queen executed her for treason, just as she did Ennis. No, I heard it was an accident. The girl stumbled on the rocks and drowned. You're both wrong. Rathos emerged from the sea and swallowed the girl whole. I swear it. Ennis didn't know what to believe, only that there were no coincidences any more. B came out of the dungeons only this morning, and now she was dead. Sure, he'd never felt the closeness to the twins he'd felt for Rhea as a child. They were bratty, insolent, conniving little urchins. But that didn't mean he wanted them to die. And Rhea wasn't Rhea any more, not the princess he once knew. She'd been broken by terrible circumstances out of her control, and when she'd been put back together she was a different woman entirely. She killed Jove. She killed my brother. It was a truth he'd been hiding from for a long time, because he'd wanted to believe in her goodness, wanted to have someone to follow, to give his loyalty to. But all along he'd known. Again, Jove and he had never really gotten along. And his brother had deserved to be punished for what he did to Rhea, but still, the fact that Rhea could murder him in cold blood, and then act as if she was distraught, a scared little girl, she was as dangerous as a snake. So he paced, a shadow amongst shadows, hoping against hope that Gwendolyn Storm would meet him as promised. She won't, he thought. Why should she? She'd escaped from the dungeon, and was likely halfway to Restor by now. In a month she'd be in Faerie, spilling her guts to Gryon Ironclad. I shall rescue Gareth Ironclad myself. Now, more than ever, he knew he needed to do whatever it took to overthrow his cousin before she shattered the Loren name forever. Soon there won't be any grass left under your feet, a voice said from behind. He whirled around to find Gwendolyn Storm perched on a low-hanging branch, her yellow eyes gleaming like a wild cat staring down its prey. You came.
I came. I assume our plan worked, as there has been no announcement of plans for Gareth's execution.
Yes, Ennis said. But something else has happened.
B is dead.
Gwen frowned.
She died in the dungeons?
Ennis shook his head.
No. Rhea released her, and then she was dead. I don't know what happened.
Rhea killed her, Gwen said with certainty.
Probably,
Ennis agreed. He had to face the truths about his cousin he'd avoided for too long.
This changes nothing. We rescue Gareth tonight.
Impossible. I'm not on duty in the tower. And even if I was, now there is always one of the Furia posted along with a guardsman.
So you'll kill her? Gwen said. The Furia are evil.
Ennis said,
They are hard women, that much I'll admit, but they've been trained to be that way. They're only trying to enforce Roth's will.
Your god is a narrow-minded god, Gwen said.
Roth is a just god.
Gwen said.
So you believe I am a demon, a witch, a dark sorceress of the forest, worshipping iron idols and seducing human men?
I didn't say that. I didn't say the Furia are perfect, nor the Westerners.
Roth is perfect, but our interpretation of God's will can be flawed. We are only human, after all.
You are not what I expected for a Loren, Gwen said, tapping her teeth with long fingernails.
Rhone is a Loren, Ennis pointed out.
Aye, and he's not what I expected either, but he also wasn't raised in Night's End. Your lost cousin practically raised himself, from what he's told me.
But you love him, don't you?
I love no one. Silence bloomed like a flower, settling in and growing roots. Ennis looked away, unable to hold Gwen's unfaltering cat-like stare. Finally, he looked back and said,
I'm on duty in a week's time in the tower. If I handle the Furia, what then? It's not like I'll be able to just parade Gareth out the front door. There are at least a dozen guards between the tower and the exit. Are we going to kill all of them, too?
Gwen smiled.
We're not leaving through the door. The window will suffice.
Unless Gareth grows wings, I'll handle that part.
You handle the Furia. Deal?
Ennis looked away, considering. He had a bad feeling about this, but he didn't have a better plan.
"Deal,"
he said. But when he looked back, she was already gone.
19. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Gwendolyn Storm. Although Gwen had been alive for nearly 9 decades, the week felt even longer, the longest of her life. She tried to stay busy, sleeping during the day in the cryptlands, beside embalmed corpses and monuments to lords and ladies, kings and queens, rulers who had despised her people in life, who had, in their hate and ignorance, issued commands to kill them for no reason other than that her people had been born different. She didn't hate these people, however. No, she felt sorry for them. For she knew what it was like to hate. The feeling like a flesh-eating insect devouring her from the inside, gnawing away at everything that made her Gwendolyn Storm, the woman her father had raised. Aye, that was how much she hated the Calypsians, their dragons, their emperors and empresses. Aye, that was how much she hated the Sands, they who had taken everything from her, who had turned her into a bitter, closed-hearted person. Until Roan came along. Grudgingly, she had to admit he'd been slowly bringing her back to life, giving her hope for a better world, a better future. For as long as she'd tried to hold back her feelings for him, he was like ocean waves battering against a shore, relentless. In the nights, she kept busy. First, she stole 20 long coils of rope. There were many places she could have obtained the rope, but she chose to procure it from the castle, which seemed to create a sort of beautiful symmetry to the last few months. Next, she tied 10 of the cords together, testing the knots again and again under her own weight, plus several large stones, while hanging from a thick tree branch. Then she repeated the process with the other 10 ropes, until she had 2 exceptionally long ropes, which she tied together and tested a third time. From there she stole supplies, food, water, satchels. It was enough to get all 3 of them to the Bridge of Triumph, at least. From there they would rely on the kindness of the Easterners, who should be more than happy to resupply an ironclad prince, or king, or whatever Gareth was now. On the predetermined night, Gwen slung the 3 full satchels onto 1 shoulder, and the heavy coiled rope on the other, and then scaled the castle wall once more. By the time she reached the top, she was sweaty under her armour, but not tired in the least. It might be a different story once she climbed to the top of the tower, but she would make it, that much she knew. Gwen didn't know how to fail, her determination like a weapon in its own right. Silently, she dropped into the gardens, repositioning the rope over both shoulders for balance, while hiding the provisions in a thick bush. A scuffle in the typically quiet gardens put her senses on high alert.
"Gwen," a voice hissed. Shite. It was Ennis, who was supposed to be high in the tower, guarding Gareth, along with a Furier he should be preparing to knock out or kill.
She stepped out from behind the bush, to find him peering into the shadows that surrounded her.
"I'm not on duty,"
he said, his eyes flicking to the coils of rope on her shoulders.
"That much is obvious. What I'm trying to discern is, why not? Rhea has begun changing the schedule at the last moment. I've been trying to find you, to tell you. We don't know who will be guarding the tower until moments before." "She suspects." "Of course she does. You escaped. Even if there weren't shadows circling her, she'd still see them in every corner." "I'll rescue him myself,"
Gwen said, gritting her teeth. She preferred to work alone anyway.
"The window is boarded up. They'll be alerted the second you try to break through."
She tried to interrupt, but he hurried on.
"I know what you're capable of. I don't doubt that. But you won't have a chance. One of the Furies are posted tonight. One of the 3. I don't care. She'll stab you between the slats in the boards. I have armor. It won't be enough. What are you saying?" "I will go to the tower. I will handle the Fury and the guardsmen."
The look he gave her was so sharp, she felt as if her own determination was being reflected back at her.
"But you said it yourself. Getting through all the guardsmen between here and the tower is impossible, even if you come up with a good enough excuse. And the Fury won't fall for some harebrained trick. You'll be caught for certain."
Yes,
he said, as if he'd already thought of all that.
You would sacrifice yourself for Gareth Ironclad. For me.
He raised his fist to his chest.
Aye. I was thinking before you arrived. I've lived a long life, a good life. But I've never really done anything that matters. For some reason, I think this might matter. Might make a difference. It's a worthy sacrifice.
Gwen shook her head, but it wasn't a denial.
I don't know what to say, except thank you. It's not your thanks I want. Promise me you'll do what you can to forge peace between our kingdoms.
His eyes shone in the alternating streaks of green and red moonlight, filtering through the branches. Gwendolyn extended her hand, and he clasped it.
I promise, she said. May Orion be with you. And Roth with you, he said.
She slipped past him and headed for the base of the tower. Gareth Ironclad.
I'd prefer if you didn't stare at me as I slept, Gareth said, his head stuffed under a pillow.
Ever since they'd returned to Night's End, Rhea had used a different man to guard him each night. But the guard was always paired with one of the Furies.
At least I still have my head, Gareth thought wryly.
Why, he wasn't certain. All he knew was that Rhea had glared at him when they'd arrived, muttered,
"Useless Ironclad,"
and then had him hauled back to the top of the tower, where he'd been bored out of his mind ever since. Perhaps she plans to try to sell me to one of my enemies, he thought. The Calypsians or Phoenicians. They would pay richly for a living prince of the East.
It's my job,
the guardsman replied gruffly. Gareth pushed the pillow away to catch the Fury rolling her eyes.
How about you? He said. Are you planning to stare at me all night, too?
As usual, she didn't rise to the bait, her eyes on him, but not. Like the other three, she wore her indifference like an armor.
Do not speak to her, the guardsman said.
Fine, then I'll speak to you. What's the weather been like? Cold, warm, wet, dry?
Don't talk to me, either.
Gareth sighed.
I suppose I'll have to speak to myself, then. Cooped up like this, it was always inevitable I'd go mad anyway. I might as well speed up the process. Gareth, how would you rate the food in Night's End? Superb. And the service? Superb. And the guards? Lacking.
The guard took a step forward.
Just go to sleep.
I will, if you will.
The guard opened his mouth for another retort, but the Fury beat him to it, speaking for the first time since she'd entered.
Fool! The more you talk, the more he's encouraged to continue talking.
The guard went beet red, but didn't say another word, stepping back. Gareth laughed.
You're not as dumb as you look, he said to the Fury,
whose eyes pinned him to his bed before roving away. Disinterested. He sighed. It was going to be a long night. Gwendolyn Storm. She was perhaps halfway to the top, a shadow clinging to the exterior stone blocks of the tower. The coils of rope were feeling heavier on her shoulders by the moment, the sweat streaming down her arms and legs and back, her muscles burning. It felt good. Like she was doing something other than waiting and preparing. If they could pull this off, if both of them could truly escape. They could find a way to contact Rhone, to let him know that he didn't need to obey his sister any more. And then they could continue their quest to discover the origins of the fate marks, what they meant. The thought pushed Gwen higher and higher, the green and red moons a mere handbreadth away from each other in the night sky. The wind picked up, whipping past her, pulling several strands of silver hair from her plait and snapping them across her face. Still, she climbed, her strong, nimble fingers finding cracks, her toes burrowing into the smallest of crevices. The ground was far distant, and the slightest misstep would send her hurtling to her death. The thought would scare most humans, but Orions were built differently. Gwen had grown up climbing the highest trees, flinging herself from branch to branch, befriending orcats and orhawks. She felt alive and free. She looked up, gauging the distance she had left. She spotted the boarded-up window, behind which Gareth was likely sleeping. She wondered whether Ennis had made it, whether he'd found a way to defeat the guard and the fury. The man, she had to admit, had surprised her in a lot of ways. His courage, his dedication to his kingdom, his desire for peace. He would make a great king, she thought. Resting for a moment, she watched the wooden planks for a moment longer, for any sign of someone breaking through them.
"Where are you, Ennis?"
she said to the wind. The wind howled in response, pinning her to the tower. Ennis Lorraine. Making excuses was easy, though it would have been simpler if he was still Ennis Lorraine and not Bairn Gentry. Regardless, the first several guards bought his lie about a change in plans, that the Queen herself had asked him to replace the guard on duty in the tower. The three guards positioned in front of the lift and staircase, however, were less stupid.
"We received no word of a guard change," one of them said, his hand resting casually on the sword hilted on his hip.
"That's the point," Ennis said. "Rhea doesn't want any of us to know who will be guarding the prisoner. There's a traitor in our midst."
Perhaps mentioning the last part was a mistake, but Ennis suspected it wasn't. What true traitor would actually say the word traitor, drawing attention to himself?
"Still, I'll have to confirm it with the Queen."
"Feel free," Ennis said nonchalantly. "Though she's gone to bed." The guard chewed on his lip for a moment, considering. Waking the Queen was clearly not his idea of a good time.
"Change of plans," he said. "We'll keep the guard that's on duty."
"Wrath. Gwen is probably halfway to the top by now,"
Ennis thought. "The woman climbs better than a monkey."
"Fine by me," Ennis said. "I'm happy to get some shut-eye, but I'll have to inform the Queen in the morning. Heads will roll."
"Don't you mean inform Rhea?"
the guard said. Ennis frowned. There was something about the man's tone.
"What? You called her Rhea just a moment ago, like she was your lover and not your queen."
"Did I?
Wrath, wrath, wrath!"
It was a fatal mistake, one that had foiled his lie before it had had a chance.
"Yes," the guard said, taking a step forward. "Your name is Bairn Gentry, isn't it? There are a lot of guards around this place, and I'm bad with names and faces, but I wouldn't forget yours. Not after the Queen chose you for Darkspell's little demonstration."
Ennis turned away, panicking, trying to shadow his face.
"Nah, name's Jack. Mother said I just had one of those faces."
Footsteps approached from behind.
"These men are innocent," he thought. "They are only following orders."
Ennis had killed in battle before, but never like this, never his allies. Something Rhea had said to him before the battle in the Bay of Bounty came back to him, as if it had been floating on the edge of his mind for some time.
"We all must sacrifice ourselves for that which we believe in."
But was betraying his queen, his kingdom, something he believed in?
"Yes,"
he thought.
"As it stands now, yes."
"Nothing else to say for yourself, Bairn?" the guard said. "Not that you've been seeking revenge for what the Queen did to you? Not that you're a liar and a traitor?"
Surreptitiously, Ennis closed his hand on his sword's hilt, his muscles tensing. He spun, slashing the man's throat before he could utter another accusation. Warm blood spurted out, splashing him across the face.
He thought, "It is done. I have crossed a line I can never uncross."
From there, everything seemed easier. While the next guard came at him, the third man fled, probably off to sound the alarm, to gather reinforcements. Ennis ducked under his foe's blade, simultaneously throwing his sword down the corridor. He was many years from his days of entering tourneys to show off his rare sword-throwing ability, but it wasn't something he could unlearn. The sword flew straight and true. Bullseye. The blade impaled the fleeing guard in the back, likely severing his spine. He collapsed like a dropped sack of potatoes. Weaponless, Ennis threw his elbow backwards blindly, landing an awkward blow on his opponent's shoulder. Unfortunately, it wasn't the arm holding the sword, or he might have dropped his weapon. Instead, the guard raked his arm back across his body, forcing Ennis to jerk away.
The edge of the sword brushed past, and Ennis felt the sting of a slash opening up on his cheek.
"I was lucky. It's naught but a flesh wound."
Ennis knew he wouldn't get lucky again, so he did what any wise warrior would do in a situation like this, weaponless, with his foe advancing upon him. He kicked him in the groin. The guard buckled over, groaning, his blade finally slipping from his fingers and clattering to the floor. Ennis kicked him again, this time in the head, and the man landed hard, rolling over once before going still. He contemplated finishing him off, but there was no honour in murdering an unconscious man, and anyway, by the time the guard came to, this would be long over.
"Let him tell Rhea the truth."
Wiping the blood, his own mixed with that of the first guard he'd killed, the suspicious one, from his face with his sleeve, Ennis stalked over to the man with the sword in his back. Grunting, he pulled it out, swallowing the bile in the back of his throat. He felt ill, not because he'd killed, but the way he'd killed. A slashed throat before the man had time to defend himself, a sword in the back.
"We all make sacrifices."
Yes, he had sacrificed. His soul, his honour, any chance of achieving the seventh heaven and looking upon Roth's face. It wasn't the time or place to think about it, and anyway, Ennis had always been a practical man.
"What's done is done. Move on. Focus on the task at hand."
His next order of business was to sever the chains attached to the pulleys, which were used to haul the lift to the top of the tower. Without someone to pull them, he couldn't use it anyway, and he didn't want anyone else to be able to. He ran for the staircase, taking the steps two at a time. Gareth Ironclad. Sleep wasn't coming easy for Gareth. He couldn't stop thinking about how that guard was probably still staring at him. He couldn't stop thinking about why he was still alive. He couldn't stop thinking about where Roan might be, whether Gwendolyn was still alive in the dungeons, and finally, whether Ennis Loren would ever follow through on his promise to help them escape. Since he'd returned to Night's End, Gareth hadn't seen so much as a glimpse of the man now disguised as Bairn Gentry, lowly guardsman. A sound drew him away from his thoughts. His eyes flashed open. He faced away from his guards in view of the boarded-over window. A bird, he thought, pecking at the wood. They did that sometimes, trying to get in. One of the boards rattled as the wind picked up, whistling between the slats. A dark eye stared in at him, a circular knot in the wood that had fallen out, the inky night sky peering through. Sometimes Gareth stuck his eye to the hole just to see something different than the inside of the tower cell. Usually the rare glimpses of the outside world were short-lived, however, as most of his guards discouraged such activities. "What the hell?" he thought, flinching suddenly. The eye had changed, lightened, a yellow orb gleaming in the dark. And then it was gone. Had he imagined it? The guards hadn't reacted, so either they hadn't seen it, or it hadn't truly happened. He blinked, pinched himself, felt the throb of pain on his arm. "I'm awake." Still, his eyes might have been playing tricks on him. That happened when you were in prison sometimes, almost like a mirage in the desert. Because only one person he knew had yellow eyes that shined as brightly as that in the dark. And she was supposed to be locked up, too, in the dungeons. Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn Storm. Looking through that hole in the wood probably hadn't been the smartest move, but everything was so still and silent inside the tower that she couldn't not take a peek. Gareth, lying on a bed, had stared right back at her, had flinched at the sight of her eye, had seen her. Which meant it was possible the guard standing by the door, a bored-looking man who seemed more muscle than brains, and a red-clad fury, so still she might have been sleeping with her eyes open, might have seen her too. Gwendolyn held her breath, clinging to the edge of the sill. When no alarm was raised, and Gareth, cleverer than he acted sometimes, didn't blow her cover, she exhaled slowly, considering the situation. Ennis should have arrived by now. Climbing steps takes less time than scaling a sheer tower wall. Then again, he might have had guards to deal with. Gwen wondered whether, when it came down to it, he would be able to do what needed to be done.
She had a feeling killing guards who were only following orders would pose a challenge for the man, who seemed to have more honour than good sense. Not that she was against honour, just when it got in the way of doing the right thing. Still, the determination she'd seen coursing across his face in the gardens, almost like a living, breathing thing. She needed to give him a little more time, a chance to come through on his side of the mission. She waited, listening to the night, hoping, praying to Orion. A voice broke the silence, muffled through the wood and yet as clear as a ringing bell to Gwen's ears. "I was sent to relieve you of your post," Ennis said.
"What?"
the guardsman's gruff voice replied. "So," a third voice cut in, a woman's voice, as sharp as a knife,
"the traitor has finally revealed himself."
Steel rang on steel. A man grunted in pain. A body fell. Gwendolyn began frantically prying at the wooden boards. Ennis Loren. He could never have let the guard live, even if both he and the Fury had bought his story. The man's blood dripped from his sword as he circled the Fury, whose sharp stare had him pinned like a fly on a board. This woman was not only trained in the art of killing, but she relished it. This was her purpose in life, to be Roth's enforcer, God's Fury incarnate, a way to punish sinners without requiring godlike power to be spent frivolously. Once, Ennis would have thought killing her was the equivalent of killing Roth, but now... The W carved into her face made him wonder whether this woman was truly ordained by Roth or merely by his cousin, a murderer, a sinner, a young woman consumed with power and control. A human, imperfect and prone to error.
"If so, I can kill her. I will kill her."
The Fury didn't speak, didn't taunt, didn't wave her blade, which was painted red as if stained in blood, around pointlessly. Each step was as cold and calculated as her stare, which never wavered from her prey. Ennis had fought seasoned warriors before, mostly Easterners trying to ford the spear. The Hundred Years' War had given him too much experience. He knew when to strike and when to sit back and let them come. But this woman, she was a spider in a web, as cunning as she was well-trained. As it turned out, the choice was made for him, for at that moment there was a sound off to the right, the splintering of wood being pried from its moorings. The Fury's head snapped toward the sound, while Ennis remained focused, slashing out while she was distracted. Clang! She blocked his strike blindly, dancing deftly to the left and leaping his next blow. Whirling around, she resembled a tornado garbed in a red dress, her skirts swirling. Her sword was like lightning bursting from a cyclone. He was too slow by half, her blade shrieking along the edge of his sword and deflecting off his armor. His plate served its purpose, but the force of the hit threw him off balance, stumbling over an ottoman of all things. And then her sword was upon him again, whipping for his neck as he dropped a hand to steady himself on the floor. He jerked his head sharply to the side, taking the blow on the helm, which popped off, clanking into the wall. He rolled right sharply, raising his sword as he emerged from the somersault, ready for the attack he knew would come. Which didn't come. Instead, the Fury had taken the time to sprint in the opposite direction, circling around him on feet as silent as a mouse, her sword arcing on the edge of his peripheral vision. He ducked, and the edge of the blade was so close he felt the displaced air as it whistled by. Crack! The sound of the board breaking and clattering inside the tower only seemed to spur the Fury on more, as if she knew she needed to end him before help arrived. In truth, Ennis had to admit he could use the help. At best, he was on equal footing with this woman. More likely, however, he was outmatched. And then reinforcements arrived, though not from Gwendolyn, whose arm was struggling to squeeze through the narrow gap provided by the broken board. From Gareth Ironclad. Gareth Ironclad. Gareth, though surprised by the sudden appearance of Ennis Loren, had not been idle during the fight. Generally his preferred weapon was a well-channeled Orion sword, but he was no stranger to improvising. Growing up with two brothers the same age had ensured he knew the ins and outs of an old-fashioned, no-holds-barred brawl. First he'd grabbed a pillow, more to use as a distraction than an effective shield. Then he'd raced for the chair.
It would be heavy to wield, but it was the best weapon he had. But then the wooden board had snapped in half, two ragged halves clattering to the floor. She's here. Gwen is really, truly here. And Gareth had turned his attention away from the chair and snagged one of the boards. Now he wasn't a moment too soon.